go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And we are off and running for the end of the week.
Oh my God, it's the Friday the 13th. Jesus, no, what?
It's Friday the 13th, and lucky for us, we're not all superstitious and stuff, so it doesn't mean anything more than the 13th day of the month of October 2017 fell on a Friday, because after all, among other things, we're not Knights Templars. Yep, never mind. It's too early for the history. No, I'm not going off into the history weeds just yet. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, indeed, this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that's where you go if you would like to be part of the madcap, merry, multimedia, zany, wacky, real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Pick out a screen name and a password, both of which are free, because everything at The Horn is free, and you will be immediately greeted by Anatole and Chugga Punch and Kit Mark and Steve from Georgistan and longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space this evening to become Man Cave there in Northern California. Sorry about the delay. I had the wrong button. Agnes had gotten everything set up for me while I was out running errands, and then I came back and changed it to the wrong way because of the doofus moran things I does. Yes. But we're on the air, and that's what matters. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast operation. Yep. And that means that we get by on listener contributions. I need to thank our buddy Will in Chicago jumping in after the program last night. Taking us down to only 200 and, to only 55 bucks to go on last night's fundraising goal. So that meant that not a whole lot was left to be taken care of overnight. And so consequently, thank you very kindly. Yes, indeed. Let me see here just a minute. Yeah, there it is. Thank you very kindly to our lone subscriber, Gary. Thank you, Gary, in Oregon, for helping this evening. We have one subscriber on the 13th day of the month, and that's Gary in Oregon. And so, consequently, our fundraising goal this evening is only $245, and that $5 bill makes things a real mess. So I won't be doing all the ciphering and gazentas. Okay? It is, of course, Friday on the front porch. Here in about 55 minutes or so, we'll fire up the extraordinary ordinary roundtable and see what's on folks' minds. I got a feeling I know what some of it's going to be. But we got $245 to raise this evening. We are 9 days away from the Horn's 12th anniversary. 12 continuous years of progressive broadcasting with no corporate support and I should note that while we're looking for always looking for contributors, always looking for new subscribers. We also have the hardworking non-scientists over at Horn Labs. Yes. And consequently, I need to let you know that depending on how you're feeling. Well, it's a simple question. Are you feeling a little run down? Are you not quite your perky self? Well, then that means that you're probably nutritionally lacking. And nothing could make you nothing will bring you back up to speed as autumn moves along. Like wild ass watercress from Horn Labs. Yes, wild ass watercress contains all the nutritional goodness of several days' consumption of watercress in a couple of simple little gelatin capsules. Wild ass watercress from Horn Labs. You know, I've never much cared for watercress, but thanks to wild ass watercress, I can get my daily fill of watercress goodness just by popping a couple of these capsules. Wild ass watercress from Horn Labs will bring out the sort of green goodness that will Jesus, come on, it's a fake product. It's sawdust inside the capsules. Still, wild ass watercress from Horn Labs is only $29.95 for a 1 month supply, 2 months for only $60. A 3 month supply of wild ass watercress, well, you can have it for just $91.50. Act now. No, don't. Operators aren't standing by. There's no free call to make. Wild ass watercress is just another bullshit nutritional supplement like you hear advertised all over the radio all the time. Only here at Horn Labs, we're straightforward enough to tell you that it's a bullshit nutritional supplement that doesn't even have any goddamn watercress in it. It's all pencil shavings. But pencil shavings is cellulose, and so it probably, you know, they put it in your bread anyway, so, you know, why not? Beats the hell out of paleo chocolate chicken bone meal beverage stuff that makes you look and sound like Alex Jones, doesn't it? Plus, remember, if you order now, we'll send you a bundle of test strips so that you can test your wild-ass watercress and be absolutely certain that it has no nutritional value whatsoever. Wild-ass watercress from Horn Labs. Accept no substitutes. Use no hooks. Do not fold, spindle, or mutilate. And this side up, wild-ass watercress from Horn Labs. Right? Right. Don't order yours today. So anyway, I would really love it. I would. And the whole Horn Family Community congregation would be thrilled to death to have me stop talking about fundraising. If we could get to maybe the 100 mark over at patreon.com or the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation at headonradionetwork.com/contribute. We're not there, but it would be nice to get there or kind of get close to being there. So maybe think about that. If you've never contributed to the Horn or haven't done that in a very long time, maybe this would be a good time. We all have our fantasies. It's like when you buy your $1 Mega Millions ticket or whatever, and you sit there and think about what you do with all those millions, those megas of millions. Well, I sit around thinking about how nice it would be to open the program every night and not yak about fundraising. If we just had, you know, 400 people at $10 a piece via either patreon.com/bobkincaid or, you know, the interface at headonradionetwork.com, and we just knew that it was going to be there. So that's the fantasy I'm engaging until, you know, like 11 days from now. I said 9, didn't I? Yeah, I don't cipher real good, but we know that. Anyway, the 24th, the 24th of February. So, I just fantasize that we're going to be fully subscribed up and go from there. And, you know, if we saw a big boost in that, you know, maybe we'd start doing things like T-shirts and coffee mugs and who knows, you know, cat sweaters and things like little horn hats for pug dogs and just as, you know, as swag as a thank you. So that's where we are. We need to raise $245 this evening to stay even with the week. Because remember, I a couple of nights ago suggested that evening's fundraising should go to Doug Jones for Senate down in Alabama. So anyway, that's where we are. 11 minutes past the hour, the Friday on the front porch. You know how to do this. It's pretty easy. Friday on the front porch will be starting up in a little bit. But I thought there was news that broke after the program last night that put me in a pretty vile mood. And I've pretty much not been okay with it all day, and I imagine you haven't as well. Namely, the decision by the toddler-in-chief who canceled eliminated the subsidies, or said he was eliminating the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act marketplace. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll be dipped. Thank you to Ron and Raleigh for the update. Hey, Bob, that whole Knights Templar snuffed by King Philip IV on Friday the 13th, 1307, is fake news. The term Friday the 13th didn't come into popular usage until 1907. So are you saying that Jacques de Molay was not burned at the stake on Friday the 13th? Or are you just saying that the whole idea of making up Friday the 13th as a bad luck day is of more recent vintage? We got to have clarity here when we're exposing fake news, Ron. Right. Meanwhile, note coming in from Steve in New York. I'll be the first to offer a $12 challenge this evening. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very kindly. Well, that's the thing. Randy says, I don't get it. What can't he do with an executive order? Well, according to them, he can do anything because, you know, he's not a brown-skinned Kenyan Muslim usurper. Overgrown giant Oompa Loompas can do anything with an executive order that they want to. But the upshot, but I don't want to talk about that yet. Let's just get, it's Friday, okay? It's Friday, you know, just like the program begins. So how about a little food porn? Really simple food porn, by the way. We're coming on toward autumn. We had a beauty of a day. I got a note from Randy in PA earlier today. It said, looks like you're having a beautiful day. And we were. This is one of those no clouds in the sky all day kind of days. By Jove, there's the first cloud of the day. Just outside the horn color weather window. But we're supposed to have a lovely weekend all weekend long. And it's October. And so a middle-aged man's fancies turn to thoughts of chili. Damn straight. And I'm just going to share this with you. This is the simplest, most nonsensical, wacky, zany, crazy chili recipe you ever did hear tell of. Naturally, unless you're like vegetarian, in which case you would use couple of pounds of tofu, the extra firm, I would suspect, because it crumbles better. But the rest of us will use ground beef. You know, brown that, drain it, soak all, as much of the grease away as you can so it's not greasy like greasy bus station chili or Wendy's chili, which is even worse. Brown that up, throw it in the crock pot. Use a good sized crock pot. Chop in some onions, finely, and some fine chopped green pepper. Maybe throw in a can of chopped green chilies, a can of the Rotel tomatoes and green chilies, preferably chili seasoned tomato sauce. And here's where it gets bizarre. One can of cream of mushroom soup, one can of cream of celery soup, and one can of cream of onion soup. And then you dump in a couple of envelopes of that just garden variety chili seasoning from the, you know, the aisle over there. I use the Wiggling Pig variety because it's literally a third of the cost of the fancy name brand McCormick stuff. It's got the same ingredients. Throw in a couple of cans of kidney beans. Put the lid on. You know, don't drain anything. Make sure all the liquids all go in. And walk away. If you do it in the crock pot, like right before bed, and just put it on low, let it go all night, you can wake up and have chili for breakfast. Which is really kind of awesome. Especially like with a, you know, like a, do up an omelet and chili with the cheese. And oh, yeah. But that, it literally takes 15 minutes or less to do all that and have a pot of chili that if you, like, have friends over to watch football or something like that, they'll go, "This is the best damn chili I ever ate." And you just look at it and go, "Yes, it is, isn't it?" Oh, what are you complaining about, Steve? Steve from Georgia Stan. My God, no wonder you have stomach issues, Bob. There's nothing... there's nothing bizarre in there. It just happens that those three cans of Campbell's soup, for some reason or another, I don't know, it's alchemical. You know, you want to put a little sour cream, a little shredded cheese on it, that's up to you. But it's chili season. And if you want to go wild with a little cayenne pepper or hay, grind in some, throw in a little bit of ground up Szechuan peppercorn. Oh, yes, that's going to happen too. Well, that's entirely up to you. But I thought I'd just throw a little food porn out there to get us started before we begin, you know, rending our garments and sitting in sackcloth and ashes and all of that stuff. Because this is another one of those take-it-personal moments. Because even though the court has ruled that the subsidies are legal, the White House issued a statement last night saying that the Department of Justice had determined that despite the Supreme Court's ruling, the subsidies aren't legal, and so therefore the subsidies will be ended, and, something like 6 million people won't be able to afford health insurance anymore. And here's my question. If you're one of those 6 million people, or if say you're like me, you haven't had health insurance for a while, and you were actually looking forward to open enrollment so that you could maybe see if it might be possible kind of, sort of, to get health insurance... And now you know that it's going to be beyond your... There's no way it's going to be within your financial reach. Yeah. How are you supposed to just look at that and say, well, you know, elections have consequences. My side got more votes than the other side, but the other side got to have their guy be president. And he's out there, and he just made it impossible for 6 million people to have health insurance. So we know as a matter of statistical fact that some... several thousand of them will just, you know, fucking die. Oh, well, That's democracy. Right? Oh, for pity's sakes, Flavio. Bob's chili. It's not Bob's chili. It's Campbell Soup's chili. I'm just sharing the recipe. I've been tinkering with it for years. How much, Jesus, man, how much sodium's in that? A pound per serving? No, no, no. That's my barbecue that soaks in salt brine. Health nuts. I don't know. You get the low sodium soups and you're pretty much done. I mean, I guess there's some salt in the chili mix. Probably mostly salt, but still. You ever eat unsalted chili? Yeah. Yeah, even the Mexica who freaking invented it went out and ground up a little bit from the salt licks where the deer were a-larping away on it and brought some back. Because unsalted chili sucks! There you have it. I mean, because it's either that or you take this personally. I mean, I feel everything's reversed. It's not a direct one-to-one analog, but I feel like Abe Vigoda just looked at me and said, or just looked at Agnes and said, "Tell Bob I always liked him. It was only business." Lib talker caught trying to kill his listeners by food OD. Earther, 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 earther. I know. Right. Oh, okay. We're getting a little more clarity now from Ron and Raleigh. Yeah, Jacques de Molay and the other Templars were arrested for heresy because the king wanted to steal their money. Not unlike Ferdinand and Isabella subjected the Jews to the Inquisition. When you're running low on funds, any excuse will do. De Molay was not burned until 1314 on a scaffold in an island in the Seine in front of Notre Dame. I knew all that. But was it on Friday the 13th? That's the question. Because there had to be a Friday the 13th in 1314. But then again, there's the question of which reckoning they were using in the Julian calendar versus the yada, yada, yada. But anyway, I get the point. Yeah, okay, there's another one. Steve from Georgia standing in the chat room. Boiled peanuts, hold the salt, please. Yuck. Right. What's the point? Salt-free popcorn. Jim apparently has a plaque for his chili recipe. These three ingredients, chili powder, cumin, basil, one USAF Best Joint Base Andrews Air Force Base, still have the plaque. Congratulations. I have a feeling there had to be more than chili powder, cumin, and basil in there, Jim. I mean, it just has to. And, of course, the sauce itself is just another mole. M-O-L-E is a Mexica word, a naught word, meaning mixture or concoction, hence guacamole, or the mole that's made with chocolate, right, but anyway. But when a man does something deliberate, whose end result is going to be the death of lots and lots and lots of people, are we really supposed to just sort of lump it? Oh, well, you know. I don't have to be here, I guess. It's kind of like, but, you know, I do. I love life. Because this is the only one I'm going to get. This is the only consciousness that's going to be me. as far as we know, in the in this particular universe. Now, there may be another one out there somewhere else, or 962 of them fold, you know, sort of laying together like pages in a book. But I don't get his, and he doesn't get mine. Or I don't get hers, and she doesn't get mine. I mean, you know, all of those, everything. No, I got this one, just like you do. You got yours, I got mine. And when somebody comes after it, it pisses me off right smart. It's like something our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent me the other night. It really gave me a right proper chuckle. He said, he sent me this thing, a wish to live forever. I met a fairy who said she would grant me one wish. Immediately I said, I want to live forever. Sorry, said the fairy, I'm not allowed to grant eternal life. Okay, I said, then I want to die after Congress gets its head out of its ass. The fairy replied, you crafty bastard. Yeah, that's an email cowbell for my lawnmowing buddy, our lawnmowing buddy, Dennis, down in Kentucky Stand. Yeah, I feel that way. And so, as I noted earlier today, a privileged older white guy with a lot of money, a wealthy older white guy, exercised a law-abiding citizen, a lawful gun owner, exercised his constitutional rights under the Second Amendment and bought shit tons of guns. And then he used those guns to kill as many people as he could with hopes of killing lots more. And yes, we're having a certain people in this country are having a hard time referring to him as a domestic terrorist because, after all, he's white. But with the exception of the dead-enders and ne'er-do-wells and weirdos who you know, follow really, really sketchy propaganda on the internet, you know, people who listen to Alex Jones and whatnot. Well, we don't have any problem calling him a murderer, a killer, because he was. Because we had the dead bodies were laying there on the ground, and the wounded, walking and prone, were there to be seen. Right? Well, how is it any different if those deaths are more, what's the word, attenuated? Is that what makes it easier for Republicans to kill? Is that what makes it easier for Donald Trump to kill? That we know that there will never be a photograph shown on television programs or anything? This person was killed when Donald Trump signed an executive order that made it impossible for her to purchase subsidized insurance through the Affordable Care Act marketplace. Because, see, that's going to be a fact. That's going to be real. And it's not going to be real once or twice or a dozen times. It's going to be real thousands, if not tens of thousands of times over, because the number of people who are affected by what Donald Trump has done is measured in the millions. So that means there are millions of targets, just like there were thousands of targets in Las Vegas. Okay. The fact that we're not going to be able to hover a camera over them and watch them bleed out does not make them any less victims. And yeah, I'm in that group. And I can't speak, I won't speak for anybody else. But I damned well do take it personally. Okay, I'll go so far as to perhaps speak for Agnes and my immediate family. They take it personally, too, because we love each other. We are a little world unto ourselves. And it's the same way with any family who is similarly situated. I'm not making this about me. I'm trying to use myself as an example. There are people in better health and there are people in worse health. But I really was. I was looking forward to seeing, because, you know, we talked about it on the program. I said I would see about health insurance on the ACA marketplace when open enrollment came around in November, and I would report back to you, and that I would then put it in your hands. Because otherwise, you know, it's not like I can go into the basement and crank up the printing press and just run off a few sheets of hundreds and go and buy some insurance. Yes, yes, I know a bunch of attorneys general have filed suit to stop this. Do I have to remind anybody what happened as a result of November the 8th, 2016? Surely to goodness, here on the 13th day of October, 2017, I don't have to go over again the, March? The 9-month-long refusal to act, the 9-month-long silent filibuster conducted by Mitch fucking McConnell in Kentucky to keep Barack Obama's nominee for the Supreme Court off of the bench, which was then followed after that day that will live in infamy, January the 20th, 2017, when Donald Trump became impeachable the moment that his hand came off the Bible and went on to nominate Neil goddamn Gorsuch for that empty seat on the Supreme Court, ensuring a not just conservative, but a goddamn right-wing, goose-stepping fascist majority on the Supreme Court for God knows how long? Do I got to do that right now? Do I have to remind people that that's the ultimate end that any challenge to this executive order will meet? That maybe some United States District Court judge will issue a temporary injunction, and the injunction will that'll be appealed to the circuit court while the case is being tried in the district court, and then the whole damn thing will be go up to the circuit court. Maybe they'll win. Maybe the attorneys general will win, and it'll go up to the circuit court, and the circuit court will say, yeah, you know, the attorneys general win, and then it goes to the Supreme Court, and Neil goddamn Gorsuch is part of a majority that'll look at people like me and go, fuck off and die. I really don't have to do that right now, do I? I mean, sure, yeah, I really like Schneiderman, the AG from New York. I like the AG from California. I respect him and I appreciate them doing what they're doing, but they cannot change the makeup of the Supreme Court of the United States. And whatever this and whatever winds up in the lap of Neil goddamn Gorsuch, Neil goddamn Gorsuch is going to do what Neil goddamn Gorsuch was paid and sent to the Supreme Court to do. And that is to facilitate the fucking murder of a few tens of thousands of American people and the deprivation of health insurance from at least 6 million others. Thank you, Steve. Steve says, go ahead and speak for me. Well, I appreciate the sentiment, but I really can't. I'm 10 years and 3.5 months from Medicare. I've had some sort of upper respiratory thing going on for a couple of weeks. Agnes has had it too. The Ferg's had it. Things like that. If you've got health insurance, you schedule an appointment. You go down to the local doc. You get some sort of med for it. But if you're uninsured, you don't. You just don't. Because the doctor's visit by itself is $60 cash on the barrel head, and that's just the front end money, and then they send you a bill for another $60. You know, for the 5 minutes you get with the doctor's appointment. So, I mean, I'm not. This isn't rhetorical. I'm really serious. How am I supposed to take this? How's Agnes supposed to take this? How is anyone supposed to take this who is directly affected by this decision? And if I'm really just better off accepting it as a matter of, you know, it's just politics, then, you know, tell me how. I mean, if I sit in the lotus position and contemplate the weird little hairs growing out of my navel, will it come to me at some point in time? As many of the things that we talk about on this program, as many things as are frustrating and infuriating, and, you know, we laugh a bit too. I do try to, in the name of equanimity, not just stay focused on this stuff nonstop. But I'm damned if I can. I got no advice. I got no counsel. Not just for myself, but for anybody else who's in a similar situation. And by the way, everybody who relies on a subsidy through the ACA marketplace is going to be in a bind. Because there's nobody out there buying insurance through the ACA marketplace who could afford the insurance without the subsidies. Note coming from Kim in New Jersey. It's not just Gorsuch, it's really the next two or three that he'll put in. As I have said many times, we are fucked. Forever. Yeah. So, and it's not just that. It's what happened with the. It's what happened with the. You know, the Iran deal today. He refused to certify, so it'll get bumped over to Congress, and well, that'll be a lively debate. Because even if there are Republicans who think that it's good for Iran not to be pursuing nuclear weapons, they don't dare say that, because if they do, the maggots who vote for them won't vote for them anymore, and will instead vote for some frothing at the mouth, rabid religious maniac, whatever the local version of Roy Tola Moore is. Because see, the Values Voters Summit, it's Values Voters Summit time in Washington, D.C. again. And, well, that means that the really, really kinky hookers and rent boys in D.C. are going to have a very, very good weekend, because, you know, the evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christians are in town. Those values voters. I think there are more liquor stores in Washington, D.C., per capita than just about any other city in the United States. And they will probably all, especially the ones near hotels, they will probably all get a workout this weekend, because the upstanding Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians are in town. And the first president ever to agree to go and speak to that bunch of theocratic weirdos was today Donald Trump. Like I said, I try not to dwell on this stuff all the time, but some of this stuff you just have to, well, you gotta monitor it if you're going to do this sort of thing. And I did, and it was nuts. Including the fact that, hey, California, you can feel ever so much better now because Donald Trump actually mentioned the fires. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned the hurricanes some more. And then he said, because apparently he thinks he's Jesus, he said, and Puerto Rico, we're going to be, I will be with you always. I'm always going to be there for you. Really? At 71, you're always going to be there? Really? And also, I had a conversation with the president of the Virgin Islands. No, really? He said that. I had a conversation with the president of the Virgin Islands, which doesn't have a president, because it isn't a country, because it's a territory of the United States of America. Puerto Rico, also Puerto Rico. Note coming from Michael in Madison. Subject line, speak for us. You are speaking for us, Bob, because we are all in this together, all caps. We are all in this together. If you or your family or any member of the Horn community are fucked over in terms of health care, then we all are. It's a goddamned human right, as far as I'm concerned, and to deny it is a murderous injustice. I don't mean to make this overly abstract. I know I am lucky right now to have what insurance I have until the day comes that I, for whatever reason, i.e. employment situation changes, suddenly don't. Thank you, Michael, because we are all in this. It's the kind of thing that will find you. If you haven't been found yet, it will find you. Got Medicare? Yeah? Feel good about that? Don't. On any given day, in any given Republican office, in any part of the Congress, the House, or the Senate, you can find a Republican who will say to you, Medicare's going broke. We got to do something about this Medicare. It's going broke. Paul Ryan himself has said it, the Speaker of the House. You're not safe either. Look what they did on September the 30th with the CHIPS program, the Children's Health Insurance Program. The Children's Health Insurance Program. They let it blow by. Oh, well, no biggie. Who gives a damn if the little brats get to go to the doctor? Right. Speaking to those values voters today, there was one Republican member of the House, I forget his name, maybe it's, I think it starts with an M, who referred to members of the Congress as shotgun shells. I shit thee not. Shotgun shells. And he said, you know, you pretty much can't tell one shotgun shell from another shotgun shell. They all pretty much look the same until you put them in the chamber there and you'd go to shoot it. And one of them, well, it don't fire. It's a dud. And what we've got is we got a few too many Republican dud shotgun shells in the Congress, and we need to eject them for not towing the line. Donald Trump. They won't bow and scrape sufficiently. They don't do a good enough job kowtowing to that orange monstrosity, and therefore they need to be ejected like a dud shotgun shell. The fact that he considered it, the fact that he compared Republicans, now this isn't, you know, liberal, progressive, goddamn wild-eyed maniac Bob Kincaid done called some Republicans a bunch of shotgun shells. No, a Republican himself did it. And of course, the purpose of shotgun shells is to wound and kill things. Yeah. And that may be the most accurate description that has been lately given of a member of a Republican member of the Congress. Ammunition to use against the American people. Because they kind of are. And it's you know, there are, this is the internet, and so consequently I can say all kinds of words that you can't say on terrestrial radio. But there are still words that you cannot say anywhere in the United States. You can't say them on internet radio. You can't say them on terrestrial radio. You can't say them on television. You cannot say them in church. You can't say them in a court of law. You cannot say them in front of the courthouse. You can't say them. You can't say them. Can't say them at the farmer's market. Can't say them while you're pumping gas. Because those words constitute the closest thing that we have in what was once allegedly a civil society. Those words constitute a heresy. And so you can't say them. And I won't say them. But I think them. I sure do think them. And it frightens me when I think them. And I don't mean to make people, I don't mean to scare people. I'm not trying to fearmonger. I'm just telling you what's going on in my heart and what's going on in my mind. And with every passing day, God Almighty, we will be at 9 months of Trump a week from tonight. Just 9 months. And every passing day seems to bring a new disaster, a new horror, a new threat to the viability of the Republic. And the Republican Congress does nothing. And the cabinet that has the 25th Amendment in its hands does nothing in a situation in which it is quite obvious that something desperately needs to be done. Not because I disagree with it politically. We'll be 12 years old as an internet-only operation the 24th. I never called for the 25th Amendment remedy to George W. Bush. We talked impeachment a little bit because there were things like starting illegal wars that looked like they were impeachable offenses. But we didn't talk about removing him because he was unable to discharge the duties of his office. We talked about impeachment because it appeared to some of us that he was committing high crimes and misdemeanors. But even the 8 years of the reign of error didn't proceed at a pace quite like this one. I always keep my eyes open for the actions of for any potential action of the goddess of irony, because we are all in her hands. And just think, a week from tonight will be 9 months of the Trump administration. What happens after 9 months? Yeah. Something gets born. What's coming? What's going to be born? Nuclear holocaust? An armed uprising by the maggots? Because, our side doesn't do armed uprisings. We might sit down at the Pentagon and meditate real hard and try to levitate it or something, but we don't do armed uprisings, nor should we. What's coming? What's going to get birthed in the days after 9 months of Donald J. Trump have been fulfilled? So that's where we find ourselves. And there's still other stuff to talk about. In light of the 25th Amendment, which, oddly enough, as a hashtag, is showing up. I've been using 25th Amendment now for quite some time. But just plain 25th Amendment started showing up after the news story that mentioned that Bannon, you know, racist Bannon, told Trump his greatest threat was the 25th Amendment, to which Tangerine Tiberius responded, "What's the 25th Amendment?" And all of a sudden, 25th Amendment started 25th Amendment started trending. I don't know that it's trending, but it started showing up. And so I read pretty much all day. You need to get out more, Bob. I agree. A guy named Julian Zelizer, who is a professor, a political science professor at Princeton University, wrote a book about LBJ, offered up an opinion piece at CNN today. Julian Zelizer, Z-E-L-I-Z-E-R. And it's kind of, and he does a reasonably good job of explaining how the 25th Amendment would work, but being as how he's a sure enough, no kidding, highfalutin professor from Princeton University, he can't help lecturing a little bit. I understand that. I don't hold it against him. And consequently, after explaining what the 25th Amendment is, and giving some background, things like Corker saying, "I know for a fact that every single day at the White House it's a situation of trying to contain him, and, you know, the fact that he may put us on a path to World War III. Oh, by the way, quick digression, World War III. War at all. There is, I have noticed in the last few days, a proliferation on both left and right of weirdos hollering that there had to be multiple shooters in Las Vegas. This incenses me. This also tells me that we've got an awful lot of people who are so divorced from any understanding of how firearms work and the damage that they can do, that they cannot conceive that one person operating a couple of guns could hurt 600 people. These are people who have, for instance, no understanding of the words like Ardennes or Verdun or Passchendaele. These are people with no comprehension of words like Guadalcanal or Okinawa, or Iwo Jima. One person with the right weapon can do a shitload of damage. But we're so preciously cocooned in our ignorance that we can't imagine that one guy with a whole bunch of weapons in really good working order could kill 59 and hurt 500. And, of course, because we can't imagine it, it can't be real. And, therefore, there must be some sort of goddamn conspiracy behind it. And this pisses me off. Because left or right, either one will tell you that this is an attempt to take away our freedoms, our rights to guns. Yes, there are people on the left who say that, too. And it's maddening. And it's at least intellectually hurtful. The same for people who say, well, you know, by God, You know, at least Donald Trump will bring on the Apocarev. Fuck you, buddy. You have no idea what a revolution looks like. I don't either. But I've read a shitload of history, and I've got a pretty good idea. Hell, I've seen the Matthew Brady photos from Antietam. Those weren't even machine guns. Those were just a bunch of guys with using Napoleonic tactics and Napoleonic distances with rifled-barreled muskets. That little twist on the inside of the barrel makes a big damn difference. So, I wanted to bring that up because Zelizer's line in his essay here about World War III. Gabriel Sherman in Vanity Fair, we went over this, reports that according to one former official, Chief of Staff Kelly and Secretary of Defense Mattis, even discussed what to do if the president attempted to launch a nuclear war. So he goes on and on, laying out the background of why it might be necessary to think about the 25th Amendment. 25th Amendment, by the way, speaks only to the inability of the president to discharge the duties of his office. It doesn't say anything about him being knucking futs. Then he gives the history of where the 25th Amendment came from, how it was ratified in 1967 because there was really no constitutional clarity on presidential succession. So after Kennedy was murdered, they decided they should, you know, come up with something. And he explains some more how it happened. And he said, as would be expected, this is an incredibly convoluted and by design difficult process, and there are many points at which it could be halted. There's also considerable ambiguity in the language of the amendment to challenge the circumstances under which it can be used, meaning to address the psychological rather than physical condition of a president. He says, and this is how it should be, and I don't necessarily take a bunch of, no. But then this, and it's almost like you want to ask Dr. Professor Zelizer if he's been, you know, living in a tuna fish can under the sea for the last year and a half or so. We must, as a nation, do everything possible to respect the democratic will as it is expressed on Election Day. You know, it was right about then, as I read it, it was right about then that Agnes popped her head in the door and said, honey, are you cussing? Because I confess I was. We must, as a nation, do everything possible to respect the democratic will as it is expressed on Election Day. Well, we goddamn sure didn't protect the democratic will as it was expressed on November 8th, 2016. Now, did we? Not even a little bit. The democratic will was expressed, and then the electors to the Electoral College said, fuck the democratic will, and now we're waiting for the baby to be born 9 months into the Trump administration. The nuclear holocaust baby, the right-wing revolution, bloody revolution baby, the climate change baby, the war with Iran, baby, the attack on Venezuela, baby, the death toll in Puerto Rico, baby, the California on fire, baby. Yeah. We must, as a nation, do everything possible to respect the democratic will as it is expressed on Election Day. Well, see, that's the thing. Removing Donald J. Trump as president via the 25th Amendment would it wouldn't respect the democratic will as it was expressed on Election Day, but it would at least remove from office the person who was the least representative of the Democratic will on Election Day. I hate it when I read things like this and little sentences like that just leap off the screen at me. He was doing so good, and then he says something like that that's it's such a simpleton's comment. Because, see, there's nothing about the Democratic will that is or ever has been expressed by the Electoral College. The most that the Electoral College can ever do is to affirm the Democratic will. The Electoral College can never be an agent of the Democratic will. That can only happen at a ballot box. And sometimes, as has happened more than once in our history, and by God, twice, in the first 16 years of this century, sometimes the Electoral College actually frustrates, confounds, spits upon, vomits all over the Democratic will. And that's where we are right now. Randy points out, if the deep state can't handle this president, they can't handle anyone now, can they? No, they can't. You know why? Because there is no deep state. I'm not yelling at you, Randy. Deep state is another one of those phrases that has no meaning, except the meaning to which people with whatever their agenda is attach to it. A right-winger saying deep state is actually talking about, people who aren't Republicans, and in particular, people who aren't maggots. If you find somebody over on the purity left who says deep state, well, they mean Hillary. Just to be clear. So I've filibustered 8 minutes into the second hour, but we've still got plenty of time for Friday on the Front Porch. You know how it works. If you want in on Friday on the Front Porch, you need to send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, on Skype, and he'll lay out the breadcrumb trail for you and shine the Bob signal off a cloud. There's one. Yep, we still got a cloud. And you'll be into the conversation. At some point in time, I'm hoping we'll get the requisite gizmo, because the stress line with the Bluetooth just wasn't working. So hopefully maybe we'll get a gizmo that I can bring a hardwired phone line in on, similar to the box that the stress line came on. And it'll be the stress line. We just may have more luck with it. But that's somewhere down the road. We've still got 245 dollars to raise this evening, because we're an hour and 10 minutes into the program and we're still at zero. Please, let's not end the week with a $245 hole. Pretty please. Which, if you actually count what happened a couple of nights ago, is actually a $445 hole, but we're not counting that, because I'm still hoping that there will be $200 that gets contributed by members of the Horn community over to Doug Jones' Senate campaign. Okay? Okay. So Michael in Madison, with his note, reminded me of a song that I've loved for a very long time that John Fox put me onto many years ago. And we will bump out of the filibobster and into Friday on the Front Porch with that. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn, and yes, I'm Bob Kincaid.
this morning, I suddenly realized we're all in this together. I started smiling, 'cause you were smiling, and we're all in this together. I'm made of atoms, you're made of atoms, and we're all in this together. And long division just doesn't matter, 'cause we're all in this together. Yeah. I saw you walking in the city. We're all in this together. The city's changing, 'cause we are changing, and we're all in this together. Every 12 seconds, someone remembers that we're all in this together. In the kitchen of your rent control apartment, we're all in this together. Come on, baby, I don't mean to rush you. I only wanted to reach out and touch you. I've got to start to open my heart. I know you think about jumping ship before it sinks, but we are all in this together. Ask a scientist, it's quantum physics. We are all in this together. And on the subway, we feel like strangers, but we're all in this together. Yeah, I love you, and you love her, and she loves him, but we are all in this together. You know, baby, there's never been protection in all the history of human connection. Come on, darling, it's alright to show me you don't ever need to be lonely once you start. Open your heart. I saw you crying, I started crying, 'cause we're all in this together. And then religion, it's a big decision, but we're all in this together. Yeah, we are all.
Ben Lee from 2005, We're All in This Together. I love that song. It's upbeat and hopeful and pleasant. And yeah. note coming from Brother Deacon Asa. When you say a baby born 9 months into the Trump administration, all I can think of is that nasty scene from whichever alien movie it was, where the alien fetus slices and tears its way out of the woman's midsection, followed by all the blood and gore. I responded to Asa saying, yeah, that one. Or the first Alien movie where it just comes right out of the dude's gut. Or, then again, there's always Rosemary's Baby. Or The Omen. All kinds of possibilities. So here we are, Friday on the front porch. Let's check in with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
There you are.
I got a little entertainment for tonight.
Oh, yeah?
See the video? It's Grady the Shop Dog.
Oh, Grady the Shop Dog. You're still dog-sitting, huh?
Oh, it'll be months.
Oh, okay. We've seen him romping around in the past, and he seems like a pretty good guy.
Yeah, well, that's how he spends his afternoons sometimes, staring at me and looking at out the door. If I had the north door open, he'd be staring at the cows.
Well, I mean, cows need stared at.
He's fascinated by those calves because they're about the same size as him. Some of them are just a little bit bigger.
Wow. Well, there's, you know, somehow it reminds me a little bit of, what was that movie about the, about the pig? Wolf. Yeah, but he's not a wolf. He's a shop dog.
Yeah. And he bugs the neighbor's German Shepherd all the time. They get up to the cyclone fence and race back and forth, barking and growling at each other.
Well, that's pretty ballsy, taking on the neighbor's German Shepherd.
Yeah, well, he knows the Shepherd can't get through the fence at him.
It's kind of like the experiment you can do with a couple of those fighting fish. What are they called? Bettas? If you've got two together in the tank, they'll tear the shit out of each other. But if you put a glass pane in between them, like a little piece of glass, they can't see the glass, and they'll just butt their heads against the glass until they realize that neither can get at the other. And then you can take the glass out, and they won't bother each other. Because they don't realize the fence isn't there anymore.
Well, I can't take the fence out. I didn't put it in. My neighbor put it in when he built his shop.
So, how are the skies? Because I heard the winds were coming back.
The sky, we're probably still under fire weather watch, but most of the fires up in my neck of the woods are out, and the air quality is fairly good, but they're worried about the air quality in the Bay Area this weekend for the Raiders game, I read today.
Yeah, it's probably not to breathe good. I mean, we've learned here in the hills and hollers, it's not good to breathe a lot of particulates while you're out there, running around and getting all hot and sweaty.
Yeah, because you know where the fires were. You're close to where you went, north of where you went to the Muir Woods.
Exactly.
Santa Rosa and Napa and Hawaiian country.
I wonder how many ancient redwoods have gone up in all of this.
Oh, I doubt if any.
Oh, good. Well, so there's at least a little bit of good news out of this.
Yeah, there's not too many redwood trees in there unless they've been planted in the cities. Most of the redwood trees are further north and towards
the
ocean.
And the fact that, y'all got rain and some stuff grew in the summer and then it dried out and turned to tinder, that's a lot of the stuff that fed the fire, right?
Yes, and the humidity was real low. And then the damn winds. I mean, they had 70-mile-an-hour winds down there.
Where did those come from? I mean, that sounds kind of simple on my part, but I mean, on the Gulf and on the East Coast, hurricane comes along, you can see it spinning there, boom, 70-mile-an-hour. Where did your 70-mile-an-hour winds come from?
Well, they weren't that bad here, but over there they were. Here they were only about, I read they were only up to 45 miles an hour.
But, I mean, was there a storm out in the Pacific spinning and generating 70-mile-an-hour winds?
No, it's just, it's a combination of two pressure ridges or something, And they said they called it the over there. They're calling it the Diablo Winds.
Okay, so it's not.
Mount Diablo is over there.
I mean, I've heard in the past of the Santa Anas down in Southern California. Is this,
well, that's what they're comparing it to. It's a new phenomenon that's happening here as the weather changes.
Okay. Well, at least you got mentioned by Trump today, so you can feel ever so much better.
Yeah, but he didn't mention me cutting up the big limb that fell off the oak tree in the wind. That was something last Sunday, I'll tell you.
How big? How long?
Oh, it was that older limb. You know, that tree's about 100 years old at least. And it's a limb about, I'd say 20 inches around.
Yeah, I was going to say, big difference between a limb and a branch.
Well, it made kind of a thud when it fell, and I ran out there to look, and I go, oh, shit, firewood.
Yeah, for those brutal winters you have, yes, firewood.
Well, I went through 2 cords of wood last year.
Did you really?
Yeah. I mean, especially with all the rain and everything we had. Because that makes it chilly to us, and the nights are cold.
Well, I saw a story earlier today. I guess this side of the country, or at least my neck of the woods, we're expecting a La Nina instead of an El Nino. We're expecting a La Nina, so we might actually have a sort of mildish winter. And everybody, North Atlantic states and New England are going to get hammered again.
It's probably true.
And I'm not sure what that means for you guys.
Now, if you were a member of the Trump administration, you wouldn't know that.
True enough. Well, let's check in real quick. I was gone last week, and so it was 2 weeks ago tonight that Billable Rick was telling us his going to see the Tom Petty shows story. And I've been waiting to talk to Rick. I want you to know, you are no longer allowed to go to concerts featuring old rock and rollers. Are we clear?
Oh, he may be busy.
Okay. I mean, I think we can have a vote. Steve from Georgistan, are you voting yes on that?
I don't know, Bob. I hate to keep Rick from going to good concerts, but if he's going to kill off all our good old rockers, man, I don't know. As long as he lets me know first, that way I could stock up on, like, all their posters and everything.
Right, and some grieving booze and things like that.
Their memorabilia, right. You know, so we'll have to check with him.
Well, I mean, think about it. He's seen The Who. He's seen Bob Dylan. He's seen McCartney.
Check. No, I haven't seen McCartney.
You know, so he's got about a 25. No, he's seen a lot more than that, though. But I mean, there was just too much. It was just too close in terms of time there. Need to take a break for a while.
But in all fairness, he did see Judy Collins, and she's 84, and she didn't croak, so he's seen her with Stephen Stills. You know, they're touring around right now. And she still could sing like a canary. I don't know if you've heard her lately. You know, you could tell she's getting up there, but man, she could sing. But Bob or Duncan, Kid Mark wants to join, and he has a webcam with a mic but no headset. Will that work?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank.
Well, he might have to mute any time he's not talking. Otherwise, we'll probably have some echo.
Right. I don't know.
Send me your request first before find him.
And explain how to do that again, or I could probably tell him. It's just Sparky Dunk, isn't it?
Yeah, you just put my name in the search in Skype. Okay. Send me a contact request.
Perfect. Well, I don't know if you can hear this or not, Kid Mark, but that's your bread trail to join in. I'd love to have you if you can make it.
Oh,
never too many people Bob's porch, is it, Bob?
Wait a minute. We've got some cowbellage going out to Earther. Lib listener Rick unmasked as rock serial killer. Does he leave the toilet seat up? Okay, Kid Mark heard. Steve in New York just suggested that this might be a lovely time for maybe Billable Rick to, you know, like, go to D.C., go to the Smithsonian, see the Museum of Natural History, go to the archives, see the Constitution, go to the National Gallery, see all the wonderful, beautiful art, and, you know, take the White House tour.
Yeah.
Tough crowd.
You got me now that I don't want to meet Rick if I ever had the chance.
Well, I mean,
because I'm turning the same age as Tom Petty next week.
Yeah, but Sparky, I mean, I love you, man, but you're not a rock star.
But you're making Joel Rick sound like he's poisonous.
Well, I mean, it's. Look, he went to the concert, then Tom Petty died. I want to be proactive about this.
But this is the only time this has happened. It's not a very, you know, we don't have a very good run about things. So, you know, if it's happened more than once, that might be one thing.
So you'd take that risk with Ringo Starr or Pete Townsend. Or Jimmy Page or say, oh okay.
Well now that's
well,
you're
not,
how many fucking
yeah, well you're not Pete Townsend or Jimmy
here.
Page now, are you?
But look at how many fucking concerts Rick goes to. I mean, one out of how many hundreds of these concerts he goes to.
Well, apparently it only takes one.
Well now.
Yeah, see.
I think the odds have been pretty good on Rick's side so far, so.
Suck up.
No, just, I'm being really, actually, quite realistic if you think about it. Percentage-wise, I think it's on his side, Bob.
Well, I mean, I guess percentage-wise, it's on my, I've got pretty good odds of not being one of the 6 million, one of the tens of thousands of people that Donald Trump just killed with his goddamned marketplace assault. But I don't like the risk. I mean, that's the thing. It only takes one. You know, you've got a chance. You go out and buy that Powerball ticket. You've got a 1 in 292 million chance. That's going to be you. So, you know, it's those 1 in chances. You know, all it takes is the one. Just saying. see, it, yeah, okay. Michael in Madison says,
yeah, I think you're getting your chances worked up there a little now.
Michael in Madison says, I've been wondering if Billable Rick got a chance to see Charles Bradley. I believe he attended a festival this summer at which Charles performed. Sadly, cancer took Charles a week or so before Petty died. And Michael adds, it's not the only time it's happened. That's why I need to know the below about Charles Bradley. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, by the way, Asa points out, by the way, Billable Rick also once called Lynn Samuels. Where is she now? Hmm? Yeah. I mean, I think we've got enough here for a segment on Alex Jones. Alex Jones!
Let's not call Alex Jones in for this. I think we can all do without him.
Maybe Rick should call Rush Limbaugh, though. Just saying.
Oh, he can call. That's fine. He can call. He can call Rick.
Not
Rick
wishing
can call
any harm
Rush on, all he wants to.
Not wishing any harm on anybody, but what's the conversation going to hurt?
Well, no, and you know, this would be ever so much funnier if Rick was actually here to like object and protest and know it wasn't me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to give him a text and tell him to jump in here. Stand by.
He might be on a phone call or something. You know, doing billable stuff.
Billable might be billing.
Well, it's I don't know. Is it past billable season? I'm not sure.
I don't know.
With taxes, it's never past billable season.
Word has it he has a hot date tonight, so.
Yeah, he was going to clue us in, too. He's been on a roll here lately.
Speaking of things tonight, and I don't think this is going to count or anything, because Rick can't hear us right now. At 9 o'clock tonight on Facebook Live, and this is what I'll be doing immediately after the program is over. At 9 o'clock tonight on Facebook Live, Jason Isbell and the 400 unit are going to be live for free from the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville, Tennessee. You know, the Opry. I'm pretty stoked. I'm pretty excited. I'll probably turn the monitors back here in the studio up pretty damn loud. It'll be a good thing. I imagine Michael and Madison's already to go on that.
Fire up the recorder, Bob.
What do we search for?
Jason Isbell, ISBELL.
Okay. That's it. Huh?
Mm-hmm. I saw it mentioned on Facebook earlier this evening. Let me look here. Maybe I'll find it. I mean, you're a big rockin', and right now his name is Jason Isboo. But at Jason Isbell, hamster of the gods. He's got a great sense of humor. Let's see. Teaser, it's on Facebook. Teaser, Jason Isbell in the 400 unit. Don't miss a special performance from Jason Isbell in the 400 unit. One of six sold-out shows. Live streaming from the historic Ryman Auditorium. October 13th, 9 p.m. Eastern. Well, it says Eastern Standard Time, but we're in Eastern Daylight Time still. But live streaming, Facebook Live, YouTube, and Twitter. So, I mean, are you familiar with Jason? I mean, have you listened to his stuff, Steve?
No, not much, Bob. I'll have to check it out.
Well, I mean, you're like a Southern rock and roll kind of guy. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that one somehow got by me. I bet Hogg's into it.
Yeah, he's not in the room this evening, is he?
Yeah, no, he usually doesn't. He takes his wife out on Fridays. He's usually not around.
Good man.
Yep. My wife's working. She's bringing me home a fifth of Jack Daniels, which you got me started on the night Trump was elected, Bob. This is all your fault. You know that.
Wait a minute.
You?
You've been working on the same fifth of Jack Daniels since November. I don't think you can call yourself a drinker under those circumstances, Steve.
This has been going on in perpetuity, though. I mean, I refresh it every once in a while. So
do you ever do anything besides Jack? I mean,
that's the only time I've ever heard you slur was that night.
Well, that took a lot of work. But so do you drink anything besides Jack?
Crown Royal. I'm a bourbon man. It's the only thing that doesn't make me sick.
Yeah. I likes my tequila, but I don't drink any of it anymore. Just can't. Damn it. But
you do that god-awful chili mixture, and that doesn't hurt you?
No. It's not greasy.
What in it would be
so harmful?
Well, I like ketchup and ice cream and mustard, but I don't mix them all together and chow down on it, you know.
Yeah, but where's the ketchup and ice cream and mustard in it?
I don't know. It's mushroom soup and chili.
Yeah, it's the damnedest thing. But then again, you have to remember that mushroom soup and cream of celery soup and cream of onion soup are, you know, you can probably make ice cream with them. It's just weird that way.
Yeah, it is pretty good stuff.
But for some reason or another, by the time it gets together with the tomato sauce and the Rotel with the chili seasonings in it, and the kidney beans and the ground beef and the chili seasoning, the packet of chili mix is probably the saltiest thing in there. But if you use lean ground beef and you drain all the fat away from it anyway, it's, and you know what? I'm not kidding. I have done this with the extra firm tofu, and it works like a charm.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what I got? Speaking of food porn, guess what I got being FedExed in tonight? Be here tomorrow.
What's that?
Half dozen colossal Maryland steamed crabs.
Aw, you pig.
Yeah, half dozen.
Oh, no. That's just too much right there.
Half dozen of soft shell crabs.
Is it softy season right now?
Now is the best time to get crabs. I mean, they're the fullest. You either get them in the early spring.
Yeah, I thought early spring was soft shell season. I didn't know they molted twice a year.
I don't know if they're molted. They're probably frozen, Bob. Still good, you know.
I just had a question from Brother Deacon Asa asking, why don't you introduce Steve to Wild Turkey? That should do the trick.
Whew, that 101 stuff will give you a new personality, tell my friend in New York.
You ever drink any rye?
My dad was a big, he used to make what was called a rock and rye out of, I think he used rock sugar. Have you heard of that?
Oh, yeah, rock candy. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was real big on that, but I'll have to give it a try. I guess I need to expand my horizon.
Try the bullet rye. I think if he were able to be with us this evening, Ron in the far frozen north, who may still be Ron in the sandbox, would probably agree that bullet rye is right drinkable.
Well, look who the cat drug in. There's Rick. Hey, Rick, what's going on, man?
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Pretty burning.
West, talking about you.
Yeah,
I have no. Hopefully, it wasn't derogatory, but
well,
whatever.
It wasn't. We've just
Rob's making you out to be the Grim Reaper.
No, well, not either. Quit it. We're just
the Grim Reaper.
No, you're
Bob.
Just,
Bob, I'll tell you what.
No, we've
Bob,
just
Bob. I'm.
Rick,
Bob?
We've just...
Bob?
No, you... No, okay, now you're in trouble with Ron. All right.
Gimmick infringement?
Yeah, gimmick infringement all over the place.
What's the penalty for that?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Okay.
So, no, we're not being mean or anything. We've just passed a resolution is all.
Okay.
You're no longer allowed to go see old rock stars play.
No. I was gonna create another one for you. You're not allowed to take time off from the microphone, because just as soon as you took the time off, Las Vegas happened, and then Petty died the very next day.
Oh, no. No. I'm taking lots of time off and nothing happened.
No.
But you went to... You went to see...
Bob, when you step away from that microphone,
you went to see two Tom Petty shows, and there he is, deader than Pharaoh's cat.
I know. Well... He sure seemed alive during the shows. He was great. Well, I'm seeing Oingo Boingo tonight.
Oh, that's okay. Go see
them. Those guys are going to die.
Yeah, go see them twice.
We want you to give Rush Limbaugh a call, too. So
there you go. Maybe that'll work. Yeah.
What are the things to do? Not wishing old Rush Bo any harm or anything, but just a discussion. What's it going to hurt, right?
The guy's going to choke on his throat fat one of these days, you know, the way he talks.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Time out. That's
really?
That's for the guy's going to choke on his throat fat.
It won't be long.
And by the way, Darlene says, "Damn, I'm jealous of the soft-shelled crabs. My favorite food. Ah, yum. Enjoy."
Hey,
I'll think of everyone. When it counts. I'm going to fry them up in butter and put it on some white bread with some mayonnaise. That's the way we eat them.
From time immemorial on the Chesapeake Bay, right?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Hey, Bob?
Yes?
I'm afraid to say we have another death watch. I just saw the Scorpions last weekend.
Uh-oh.
And they have a lead vocalist, I think his name is Klaus or whatever, who's like 69 years old. So we better be careful there.
Absolutely. And you are not allowed to go anywhere near an Al Stewart show, okay?
No, I'm definitely going to go see Al.
No, you can't. Somebody will tackle you before you get there. It's forbidden.
And stay away from the Burrito Brothers, too, by all means.
I saw a note where Faith, our buddy Faith up in the upper Midwest, said she saw America and Al Stewart together on the same bill and said it was a great show.
Oh, when was this? Recently?
Yeah, this last couple of weeks.
Oh, really? Okay, because I saw America at a small club I'm going to tonight called The Rose in Pasadena. It's like a, kind of just like a music club. It's maybe 500 people, venue.
And that's Oingo Boingo tonight, right?
Oingo Boingo tonight, but
yeah,
the guy,
we're so not
the guy,
worried.
Yeah, the other guy for America, not Dewey, not the guy with the long blonde hair
Dan Peek's the dead Christian one.
Okay, yeah, but the other guy has kind of lost it. I forget his name.
Jerry Beckley.
He's not as good as Dewey. Dewey sounds just like him, just like the old days, but Jerry doesn't. So I was disappointed in that. And I also saw Eddie Money at the same place at the Rose, and I was disappointed in him. But I saw Judy Collins, and she was tremendous.
Why can't you go see Ted Nugent?
Ted, there you go.
Maybe you could catch a Kid Rock show.
Oh, geez, there you go. There you go. Well,
I doubt if they have concerts in L.A.
Oh, death.
Ted does. Ted probably does.
Just put in your earplugs and take one for the team.
Okay, I could do that. I'll just have to crap my pants before going to the show, like he did, to get out of the service, military service.
Oh, what a delight.
I better stand the whole time, though, if I do that. Oh, jeez.
Yeah,
7:42 and the program's in the gutter.
My apologies to everybody eating dinner there.
Rick, I'd advise you not take a date on that one either.
Mm-mm. No, I've got like four dates this weekend. I had one last night, wonderful lady from Peru originally, and going out with her to the Oingo Boingo party, and then I'm also dating another woman Saturday night. And then I've got brunch with another woman on Sunday, and I just got tickets to game two of the NLCS, the Cubbies of the Dodgers, and I've got to find a date for that one. So,
was that a bizarre game last night or what?
Oh man, I've never seen anything like that. They scored on three runs on ground outs. They scored on a hit batsman. They scored on a passed ball. I think they scored on a walk. Right?
If I hadn't known better, I would have sworn that the Nats were actually the Braves in different uniforms.
Yeah, well, they're sort of like the 1969 Cubbies, that black cat running across the field, and from then on the Cubs like totally tanked, and the Mets passed them and won the division by like, 9 games or something crazy, So yeah, I mean, the Nats out hit the Cubs like 12-9 or, more, but 9 hits and 9 runs and none of them were homers. That's like bizarre,
Oh, it was just a weird baseball game to watch.
But it was a fun game to watch.
8 unanswered runs. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Eight unanswered runs through the sixth inning it was crazy.
And then Scherzer just totally fell apart. He got the 2 quick outs, and then I thought, oh no, this is like not going well. And then, and then there's like 3 hits in a row, and then you have the passed ball by the catcher, and the hit batsman, and you had catcher interference to get a guy on base, and he came around to score. I think crazy.
Oh,
anything that could happen happened.
Oh, by the way, going back to brown liquor for a minute, note coming in from Steve in New York. Just had to say, saw a few bottles of Pappy Van Winkle 20 sitting around. Really? Did you? I don't know. Steve, we're gonna expand your horizons a little bit.
You got to tell Jake Cruzan about the Pappy Van Winkle because he had a challenge about to Bob.
I think that one's long in the past now.
Okay.
I had a Facebook chat with him the other night.
Oh yeah, good. How's he doing?
working all the 16-hour shifts he can.
I can imagine being where he is.
And he's getting the doors.
Oh, damn. I hate to hear that. But I figured he'd I figured he would have lots of work in the aftermath of Irma.
Well, on the positive side though, with Jay, hopefully he's not going to be too upset. He's got a girlfriend. So,
okay, let's not talk about somebody who isn't here.
Okay, okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah.
That's
But he told me to say hi to everybody.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he calls me when he wants to get a hold of me, he says I think he calls me Stick Rack or something like that. He texts me.
Okay.
Or he says like "fuck you, Rick" or whatever. "Fuck you, Stick Rack" or something like that. You know.
Oh, by the way, Brother Deacon Asa reminds us the Nats are a big effing fraud. They stole their W straight from Walgreens. The bastards. The company's over 100 years old. Well, and they stole their baseball team from Montreal. As a Canadian, I would think that that Asa would be a mite pissed about that too.
Maybe they can't win. Maybe they can't advance in the playoffs because it's the curse of the Canadians.
Right. You know, maybe some guy was standing there as they left, going, "Ah, curse on thee, hex on thee, hex on thee."
Yeah.
Although isn't it like snowing in Montreal by now? Or, well, I don't
know. Not quite. Maybe around Halloween, maybe in a couple of weeks, Bob.
Oof. Beautiful city, though. Beautiful city, I'm told.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of it. I've never been there. Yeah.
So it's a crabby weekend in North Georgia, is it, Steve?
Yeah, man. Soft and colossal steamed.
So, but you can't, you know, it's not like you can just sit down and guzzle Jack and eat crabs. I mean, so, you know, you got a good beer to go with that?
No. Crabs, you have to have beer. I'm not a beer drinker, but I change the rules when it comes to crabs. You got to have, preferably Budweiser, at least a six-pack.
Oh, God.
When you're picking crab.
I thought you said beer.
Beer, yeah.
Yeah, Budweiser's not
when
beer.
When you're picking crabs.
Beer, not piss, Steve.
What do you think they have those big-ass horses for?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, no.
Throw stones at me if you want, but that's my preferred beer.
I don't even drink beer, and I know, you know.
Oh, we got to have a long talk,
I mean, I don't
Steve.
Drink Budweiser, for Christ's sakes. I wouldn't.
I just keep it simple. You know, no micro brews, no sissy beers, just... How about some
you're
going to
get Steve,
like
you're going
to
get Jesus Christ, you're going to get emails. Sissy beers?
Micro beers, yeah. How about some Iron City or Manly beer?
Well, if
you
were
know,
if you were having a sandwich at Permandy's in Pittsburgh, it would be absolutely required that you have an Iron City. It's on tap. It's the water.
Well, The beer of Maryland back in the day was National Bow. That's where their brewery was located.
Natty Bow.
That's the beer where the little man's winking at you. But haven't seen much of that beer in Georgia Mountain.
Yeah, there's a reason he's winking.
So that's what's going on that end. And
we're just
Miss Karen just brought me back my Crown Royal.
Oh, Crown instead of Jack, is it?
It was Crown Royal. Yeah, Crown Royal XO. I don't know. She must She must feel sorry for me. It was on sale. She's yelling back here.
Okay. All right.
There was a reason for that.
Well, you know.
I was thinking the same thing. It must have been. It's a woman thing. If it's on sale, it's okay.
She loved me. Now it was a sale item.
Yeah. See, if you'd been married less than 5 years, it would be because she loves you. You've been together for a while, so it was on sale.
Going on 21, yeah.
Jesus, you better be glad the house.
Somebody's got a Burgermeister.
You better be glad the House of Usher Scotch was at regular price. Okay, we're just pissing Darlene. We're just pissing off Darlene in Connecticut now. All right, hand them over. Steve's going to have to hand those soft shells over to me if he's having crappy beer with them.
All right, well, what beer would the Horn family
recommend?
I told you
you'd get email. Steve in New York, Budweiser is the sissiest of the sissy beers.
Yeah.
I had an Avery barrel-aged coffee stout last night, which was 17.5% alcohol by volume, damn it. Yeah, sissy beers.
A Genesee Cream Ale? A PA beer? Rolling Rock?
Ron in Raleigh says, beer for crabs. Steve needs National Bohemian. Chester Peak is the winking guy. Yeah. Okay. This isn't going to end until you promise never to drink Budweiser again, Steve. I mean, it's just not. And but you say sissy beer.
All right.
I've mentioned you know what they call Michelob Ultra around here. I don't know if they call it that anywhere else, but around here, Michelob Ultra.
Hate that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't tell the difference between that and water, but no, around here, Michelob Ultra is referred to
as natural light.
No. Michelob Ultra is referred to around here as, and this is not, I'm not trying to be sexist. This is something that was said to me by a woman. Michelob Ultra around here is referred to as cheerleader beer. Because the cheerleaders drink it. Because it's because it's less fattening.
How do you like that beer, Bob?
Michelob Ultra?
No, the beer.
You're spinning that around, Duncan. No,
yeah,
he's got
camera.
It's called nude beer.
It's so bad, but it looks good to look at. You know?
That looks like a winner.
I think that's the. Isn't that the official beer of the nude radio programming there, Bob? When you do the radio in the nude.
No,
beer?
I can't get that here, sadly. But
oh. Okay.
Well, I mean, I can't drink it at all. So you know, there you go. But you know, what are you gonna do?
Oh, I thought you meant you can't do nude programming there.
Oh, no, I do that all the time.
I thought maybe Agnes had outlawed it or something.
No. She just she just insists I reclothe before I come into the rest of the back of the house. Yeah.
Nude beer is from the Eastern Brewing Corporation of Hamilton, New Jersey.
Huh. Never heard of it.
I don't know where even the bottle came from. It might have been my stepson's or something.
Well, Steve in New York has pierced the soul of Randy in PA. He says, oh, God, it's been so long since I've had a stout. See, people are... See what you start, Steve? Budweiser, really.
Well, hi, y'all.
Well, hey, Haley, how are you?
I'm doing well. I just heard this afternoon that Jason, you know, speaking about Jason Isbell, he is going to be playing a show, headlining a show in Little Rock next January 21st at what used to be Robinson Auditorium. Now it's called Robinson Performance Hall. But I remember I went to one of his last show in Little Rock a few years ago, where he was an opening act for Dawes. And what was interesting about that concert, it was at a club, was that most of the crowd left after the Jason Isbell set was done.
Oh, that's
and
right.
He was just, yeah, seriously. But he's going to be headlining finally in Little Rock this coming January. And I'm going to see if I can get tickets for that.
I think that'll be probably one of your wiser entertainment purchases for the new year.
Yeah, it kind of perked up my week. It's been kind of a last interesting couple of weeks, and not in a good way either. Just been two things. It's just last couple of weeks since I got back from my vacation. It's been, you know, just, yeah.
just kind of blah. So was it?
Yeah,
was it a go somewhere vacation or was it a staycation?
It was mostly a staycation. I thought I went over to cross the river over to Mississippi Stan and went to a ham radio event in Stark, Vegas, Starkville.
Oh, yeah.
And then I met one of my Facebook friends. She invited me and said, and then she lived in a town of half an hour away. I said, do you want to have the dinner? I said, sure. We met in a little at a little Mexican restaurant in the little town southwest of Starkville. It was not Philadelphia, by the way. So
good job.
Yes. She's a sister of sorts. But it was a good visit, and the trip was good. I had no issues going over there as far as being, you know, having people stare at me. Although I did have this guy ask me. I was wearing a T-shirt. I had on the front of the T-shirt said, I love Lucy, and then it had the back of it said, Lucy's Place. He didn't see the front of the T-shirt. He asked me, is this Lucy's Place a hunting club? I said, no, sir. It's a nonprofit organization in Arkansas.
To which you must have got a, huh?
Yeah, he was, yeah, it was one of those. It was one of those deals. And also, I discovered, I was kind of surprised and delighted that there is actually college radio at Mississippi State University. I found it by accident. It was one of the few times I've driven a long trip that I didn't put a podcast on, and I got on the other side of I-55 and stumbled across, I thought it was another station I was picking up, and it turned out to be WMSV 91.1 in Starkville. And they're not the public radio station. There is a public radio network over there in Mississippi, but this is not, you know, connected with that. And they were the basic college rock radio station. It was pleasant surprise. But that said, I have really a lot of concern about what's going to happen over there in Mississippi with that the Fifth Circuit Court didn't do their job and were just absolute cowards and not considering the case and just dismissing the case about HB 1523. So it's going to be hell among the yearlings over there, I'm afraid.
Well, that doesn't sound promising, does it?
No, it doesn't. I didn't want to put a bad spin on things, but ending on that particular conversation, but just has to be seen that the atmosphere. And I've been trying to monitor what's going on over there in Mississippi, and I know some people over there, you know, personally. And people, what's, you know,
you're near to Mississippi. Are you following any of the Thad Cochran stuff?
I haven't heard anything yet. I don't get any of the TV from over there. I'm too far away.
It's not really getting a lot of TV coverage. It's more sort of mumblings in the print world, but apparently Thad Cochran is not a well man. He had some sort of urological, it was described as a urological problem. And, you know, he's 76, so you kind of got to guess prostate. But he's been gone. They swear he'll be back next week. but he heads the Appropriations Committee in the Senate. And his absence, hi, Biscuit.
Hi.
He heads the Appropriations Committee in the Senate, and if he's not there, they're going to have a real hard time ginning up a bullshit committee passage of the so-called tax reform.
Well, that could be interesting. I'll have to just follow that more. There's just been so much going on the last few, that last year. I mean, it's 9 months. This 9 months have just been hell.
Well, it has been, and it's not showing any signs of letting up.
Nah, not only that, it just seems like it just gets worse week after week after week. And it's kind of hard sometimes between work and just to keep up with everything. And I try my best, but sometimes I just have to walk away from it for a day or so and just take a break from it. Keep my sanity, especially during weekends.
Well, and you know, we're all kind of, and I mean, I talk, you got to find some way not to let it completely eat you alive, whether it's watching a ball game, you know, the Mountaineers play Texas Tech tomorrow. So, you know, I've got something to be worried about. I'll just listen to it on the radio, whatever. And, you know, you've got your Razorbacks, Haley. Wait, aren't they at Tuscaloosa this week?
The Razorbacks, yeah, they still have a team. They still have their present coach, and it's a question of whether they're actually going to show up or not.
Tomorrow's homecoming in T-Town, so maybe they'll be inspired to try to ruin Alabama's homecoming.
It's going to be ugly, I'm afraid. I think it's there's still a chance for a perfect season in Fayetteville this year, you know, winless perfect season, that is.
I knew that's where you were going.
But Missouri's the biggest threat right now to that. I mean, we don't have Kentucky on a schedule, nor is Vandy on a schedule this year. And
Mizzou is pretty awful.
Mizzou is scraping the bottom of the barrel. LSU was looking pretty bad, but then it showed signs of life last week. And then, you know, the Mississippi teams are always dangerous and always on our schedule. So, but at least there's Division II UAM Boll Weevils to pull for. So, I mean, they've been showing some signs of life.
What's the school cheer there? Woo Weevils. Is that it? I mean, I know it's like Suey Pig for the Hogs. So
they do something like that. And then there's a slogan they use that says, "Ain't nothing more evil than a damn boll weevil."
Oh, there we go. By the way, you just got a little advice, Haley, from Michael in Madison. Advice on Isbell tickets: don't sleep on it. This morning, I bought tickets for his Milwaukee show at the Riverside Theater in January. The pre-sale started at 10 a.m. I needed four seats together. I couldn't sneak away from my work until 10:30. Three-quarters of the floor was already gone. Instead of taking best available back in the ass end of the floor, I selected balcony and snagged fourth-row balcony. Looks like there are still decent balcony seats left right now, but the show definitely will sell out sooner rather than later. Michael mentions he's currently doing a six-night residency at the Ryman in Nashville. I think he sold out all six of them. They did all six sell out, and that's why the show tonight is live on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. So, if you're going to get them tickets, you might want to snag them quick. Let's see. I got John calling in. John, reach out to Sparky and you can jump in the group. No, that's 9-8 your time. As soon as the program's over. Yeah, I'm firing up the Jason Isbell concert. By the way, big thanks going out to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. Steve just said, Cletus found you, Jackson. Now you got to say something nice about Budweiser. Steve says, damn, I never realized there were so many Bud haters. When in Maryland back in the day, it was our default beer. Well, it was everybody's default beer before America figured out that there was actually good, that it was possible to make good beer. But anyway, thank you. Thank you to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. That gets us started and takes us down to only $225 to go for the evening, with 54 minutes remaining in the program this evening. That's to keep us from ending with a $225 hole that'll turn into a God only knows what hole by Monday. You know, we'll get we're reaching mid-month, and that's where we start seeing a little bit of a fade in the subscriptions. But thank you very kindly, Steve and Ms. Karen. See, that's what happens when the crown's on sale, right? Thank you, Ms. Karen. Thank you kindly. So that's nice. By the way, Steve in New York mentions I also had a Russian Imperial too. Good shit. Oh, good. It's a beer conversation tonight. That's so much nicer than talking about. The fact that the President of the United States has essentially signed death warrants for a few tens of thousands of Americans, isn't it? I'd rather talk about beer. Who am I kidding? I'd rather drink the stuff, but oh well. You know, maybe someday, but, you know. Just on general principle, no. And more's the damn pity. You know, mostly it's
America. Have you seen the way Ophelia's tracking? That is crazy.
Yeah, I mentioned that last night.
I don't think anything's tracked like that since 61.
It's going to Ireland. Did. Yeah, I mentioned to Sandra on Twitter earlier today. I'm so old, I remember when an Irish hurricane was Jameson's in red Kool-Aid. Tough crowd.
Tough crap. You got that on Bourbon Street.
Yeah. Fuck all y'all. I'm giving me a cowbell for that.
Yeah, but look at the. Yeah, you deserve one, Bob. If you look at the way that thing's tracking, Jesus, I think the last time ones went that way is 1961. It was Hurricane Debbie. I mean, I was researching this today. I could be wrong, but. Man, that's the craziest track I've ever seen in my lifetime, and I'm a weather geek, you know.
Could be 100,000 or more people without power, you know, because climate change is a Chinese hoax designed to destroy our manufacturing base. Right. And well, but speaking of,
you know, these rubes, they've even got the. Go ahead, Bob.
No, you. I talk for 3 hours a night for four nights a week. It's your turn.
The rooms have got the moderators out at Washington Journal spooked now. You know what they opened up with their open phones? You know how they have that open phones hour?
Oh, yeah.
Yesterday? Yeah. We're at the edge of thermal global nuclear war. Let's face it. And I don't want to bring anybody down, but we are. And they opened with the Boy Scouts. And the Boy Scouts are letting girls in now. That was their big topic. And people were even complaining the first call.
Well, at least it wasn't sex robots.
Yeah, hey, John. Yeah, that was Greta. The first caller was like, what is wrong with you people? Do you know, what we're facing? And you want to talk about the Boy Scouts? Really? So I don't know who the Washington Journal listener for the horn is, but I'm about to just let him
Todd.
Have it all.
That's
man.
Todd. Todd takes one for the team every morning.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, another email.
You can have it.
Another email, this one from Darius. Bob, there's a Bud shortage. Two of the Clydesdales have urinary tract infections.
Ah. Oh.
No,
let's talk about Gordon putting junk all over the couch, you know.
Well, no, I thought it was rather funny. The Boy Scouts and the sex robots, what now? The Boy Scouts letting sex robots in? No. Was that where this was, where was going there? Now, that would be something interesting to hear.
They're letting girls into the Boy Scouts. Big deal.
Well, no, they're
going to be the topic of discussion?
They're going to start them in the Cub Scouts.
And they're creating a path for girls to become Eagle Scouts.
I was a Cub Scout once upon a time.
I was not.
I think I was a Boy Scout, and I don't think I would have cared.
I wouldn't have cared.
In fact, I'd probably look forward to it, you know.
I never went to the next stage, so it's too boring for me, I guess.
Well, I did like the Baptist version, so...
I can't remember. I'd have to ask my mom, but she's got... So it'd be like barking a tree.
I was a
tomboy. I would have loved it.
That was back in the early 60s when we were going through that Cuban Missile Crisis shit and all that, too.
Oh,
I remember that like the back of my hand.
Nerve-wracking.
You were
11, Sparky. How did you find out about it? Was, you know, the grown-ups saying, "Well, you know, well, son, you know, we may not be here tomorrow." I mean, was it a talk or was it just something you overheard?
No, it was something I saw on TV. Now this is back in 1962 when most people still have black and white TVs and they only get maybe 2-3 channels. We only got 3 channels where I lived in Willows, California. But we had the evening news to look at. I mean, every night it was like that was family get-together, you sat down, everybody sat down and watched the evening news. So I sat cross-legged on the floor, right, had the black and white TV in one corner of the living room and in a 1915 ranch house that we were living in. It was really strange house to begin with and everything. And then my bedroom was a little side room off the house that went down to the basement where there was a picture of Napoleon's retreat from Moscow hanging on the wall. I shit you not.
Jesus. Duncan, did you practice duck and cover?
Oh, yeah.
You remember back that far?
But I remember watching the TV, and I can remember seeing the YouTube... YouTube photos of the missiles on the ground in Cuba, and then they started the blockade, and then everything came down to that one day. It was just like it built up because there was a Russian ship approaching the blockade. Would it turn around or would it try to break through the blockade with missiles on it? And it turned around, and the whole thing, you know, ended. They made deals, you know. Kennedy gave away the Jupiter missiles in Turkey, and Khrushchev pulled out the missiles from Cuba, and everything went.
Yeah, which was kind of the cause all along, because you know, nuclear missiles in Turkey pointed at the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union felt like they kind of needed to point some point blank at us too.
Yeah, and only a couple of years since Castro took over, so Cuba, and he first people he went to was Russia for help.
Well, after we made it clear that we were not going to be friends.
USSR, not the Russia, USSR.
True. Randy in PA says, I was 5 during the Cuban Missile Crisis. My mom said, how would you like to spend tonight in the bomb shelter? Okay.
Oh, and one other thing.
My dad was like staying out in the tent.
My dad ran a backhoe service, and he was digging a lot of bomb shelters for people.
Oh, I'll bet. You know, there's that wonderful line in that Donald Fagen song. What is it? wonderful world. No, I'll find it. But there, the line is, it's just a dugout that my dad built in case the Reds decide to push the button down.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rick, you didn't see Steely Dan any time in the recent past, did you?
Yes, I actually saw him.
Damn it!
I did in June. West in Dodger Stadium.
We're doomed.
And then, you know, and then the who was it Becker that died?
Yeah.
Yeah, Becker died like what, about 2 weeks after. So what can I say? I guess I'm just, you know, I guess I'm like fatal to, you know, older rock stars. Although I did go to Geezer Chala, and none of those, you know, major acts tipped over back in October.
Well, that's because
year,
there were so many people there that your Sith powers were diminished.
Oh, okay, could be.
Yeah. By the way, the Donald Fagen song from The Nightfly is "New Frontier." It's just a dugout that my dad. It's a great, great lyrical images in that song.
What was Becker's first name, Bob? I always forget
Walter.
His first name.
Walter.
Walter, of course. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, John here.
Hey, John.
Yeah, I was wondering something. This is kind of random, but it was really just for some reason it popped into my head. You met Mike Malloy in person before, right?
Several times, yes.
Is he shorter than you are in height?
No, about the same. I mean, we're not girth-wise.
Oh, is he a tall guy?
You know, maybe a couple of inches less than me, but
yeah, 6 foot, I guess.
Yeah, he's not a hobbit or anything. I mean, Steve, you know.
Oh, Steve, you saw him before too.
Yeah, he's about 6 foot.
I wish I could meet you guys.
Yeah, we went and seen Kevin Kenny.
Oh, okay, cool.
We went and seen Kevin Kenny up in the mountains.
I wish he would be on tonight because I wanted to hear what he had to say about the domestic terrorist attack that the President of the United States perpetrated on the innocent people of this country today.
Well, it is kind of one of those, isn't it, John?
It is. I mean, by definition, it is a domestic terrorist attack. If you really look it up, it was politically motivated, and it is going to cause harm to innocent people.
And people are terrified as a result. I am too.
I mean, I'm on the subsidies program, and you know, I'll tell you something. I'm not a guy who cries very often. You know, I don't know. I'm not trying to say I'm like manly or anything. I just don't cry very often. And the last time I cried was about 3 years ago when my mother died. But you know, I actually cried today because of what he did, and not only because of you know, it wasn't selfish crying. I wasn't like boo hoo me. I was crying because we're really starting to see the results of the brutality that's going to come from this regime. And what really made me so sad was the fact that our fellow citizens did this to us.
Well, and a lot of them did it. And I'm not, this is not me giving them a pass, John. A lot of them did it in ignorance. Because they don't know enough about how government works, and they bought the bill of goods that Marcus Aurelius was selling, and they didn't realize that they're the ones who are going to get hurt as much or more than anybody else. Okay, I kind of live at the intersection of two bad decisions that have been made in the past couple of weeks. This one last night, and I understand what you meant about crying because. I was beside myself. You know, I closed the program last night talking about, you know, maybe about, you know, I'll let you know after open enrollment and we might have to bump up the fundraising goal just so, you know, I can have some health insurance. I don't like doing it, but it's my only option. So anyway, so boom. And Agnes, she wasn't happy. And I had messages all over the place from people who listened to the program talking about how disturbing it was to them. So there's that. And then there's Scott Pruitt announcing the rollback of the Clean Power Plan. Now, most people go, well, of course, of course, that was Barack Obama. That's a Barack Obama thing. So naturally, he's going to roll back the Clean Power Plan. Okay, yeah, that's true. But we forget what the purpose of the Clean Power Plan was. And it wasn't just to, you know, make a war on coal. The purpose of the Clean Power Plan was to save people's lives. Because yes, there are 40,000 plus statistical excess deaths in the United States every year that come as a result of the particulate pollution, not the mercury, not the lead, not the arsenic, none of that shit, but from the particulate pollution that is put out by coal-fired power plants. I don't care how good they are, how modern they are, they all put out particulate pollution, and it kills more than 40,000 Americans per year. So when you take that, and we got a lot of coal-fired electricity here in West Virginia, almost exclusively, and you merge that with this assault on the ACA marketplace and the subsidies for coverage, he's actually going to be killing the people who love him most.
Yes, absolutely. And they don't realize it, Bob. That's the thing that's so, well, they either don't realize it or don't care. That's the thing that is so gross about it all, man. And, you know, all this political posturing, like, oh, we're the war on coal is officially over, which is a big propaganda. It's just what we're seeing is just every faucet of fascism. I mean, everything from the NFL players. When I saw that he's meeting with some NFL owners, I thought, holy shit, that is straight up and down fascism. They're colluding with this guy after he went after their black players. I mean, it's crazy, man. And then the Weinstein thing just proves how ignorant and hypocritical these people are, because now they're trying to say things like, oh, see, he was a Democratic Party donor. The Democrats own this guy and stuff. It's like, wait a minute. Roger Ailes worked on his campaign after he was ousted from Fox News for what he did. It's incredible stuff. And what it is we're seeing fascism in every single, you know, just think about what it's going to be like 4 years from now, man. Think about that. It's going to be nuts, because none of this is getting any better. It's getting much worse. The country is getting more divided. People are getting angrier. And now I'm starting to see some surprising things, like today or the other day, a guy I work with who I thought was a right wing redneck. He's like a redneck type guy, which is, you know, I'm kind of a redneck too, but you know, he's real right. I thought he was really right wing, you know, gun nut, all that kind of stuff. Somebody was talking about Trump, and I said, I'm sorry, but he's a maniac. That's what I said about Trump, and people were giving me pushback. And this guy stops me, and I thought he was going to confront me about it. He goes, I'm glad I'm not the only one in here that hates that son of a bitch. I couldn't believe it. I was like, really? You know, it turns out he's more of a libertarian type, but he still apparently hates Trump. And, you know,
there's hating Trump for the right reasons, and there's hating Trump for the wrong reasons.
They hate Trump. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you, please.
I was just going to say they hate him because this guy probably hates him because he's not hard enough on poor people or something, you know?
It's like the Freedom Caucus. You know, they hated the skinny repeal because it wasn't shitty enough to people. Okay.
Right. Yes.
But that's something that I'm kind of keeping on my radar a little bit, because you know there are people out there that you go, well, I actually agree with what they're saying. But you also at the same time realize that if things got back to normal, you'd be back to disagreeing with everything that they said after the word hello.
Yes.
Because they're not going to stop. They're not going to stop being the conservative Republicans that they are. We just have a unique crisis at this point in time. Here I go again. It's like the Second World War. We were not pals with the Soviet Union, but it was absolutely incumbent upon us and the British and the French resistance and whomever to ally ourselves with fucking Stalin. And yeah. So, but you know, these if we were to be done with Trump and Pence, and had a majority in both houses of Congress and a Democrat in the White House, it's not like they'd be on board going, "Yep, definitely time for single payer, no doubt about it, time for single payer, right there with you."
Oh,
no, they'd be screaming communism just like they always did.
Right, and that's what they're trying to say this about what he did, or about the subsidies. Not them, but the excuse that they're talking about kind of goes back to communism, I guess, for them. But they're saying that the subsidies are unconstitutional. It's like, well, okay, if they are, I'm not saying they are. If they are, well, just like you were brought up earlier today or earlier in the program, well, so was blocking Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee until they held it over until the next party got into power. And that was like a coup in a sense. That was like a little like a miniature coup, you know what I'm saying? In a sense, I don't know. That was a real fascist thing to do. I mean, this is fascism. And I was just with my aunt, and God love her. She was kept. I'm talking about the stuff about the subsidies and stuff. I said, I'm gonna lose my health care. And she goes, well, you need to calm down. It's like. You know, I'm tired of people not taking this seriously enough.
Right, yeah, John, serious. You need to calm down. You need to let this fucker kill you and do it with a goddamn smile on your face. That's what you need to do.
Yeah. Right, and I'm nothing against my aunt. I'm just saying
I wasn't trying to be a jerk either, but that's the question I was asking earlier. What is the normal response? What is the acceptable response to having the President of the United States declare war personally against you and a few thousand others, or actually millions?
Yes.
But, you know, look, this is obligatory Star Trek reference. This is that Star Trek episode, you know, where the crew from the Enterprise finds the planets that are at war with each other. And instead of shooting at each other and having blood and gore and guts and bodies piled up all over the place, they just run a computer program. And they got a little lottery, and your number comes up, and you go into the disintegration chamber, and, you know, goodbye, you're a casualty of war. That's what this is. It's nameless, it's faceless, but it still winds up with dead people.
It's every bit as brutal as it is, like you said, nameless and faceless. I can believe that what he did, but I cannot believe that people in his administration, I'm sure there was a ceremony where there was all kinds of people smiling and clapping at this cruelty. And I can't believe that people support this shit, that there's people out there who actually support what he did today. I mean, it's cruel beyond belief, and it's really sad, and it's too late, man. I'm sorry. I don't mean to sound negative, but it's too late. I don't think
can
that
I,
we
can say something real quick?
Yeah, sorry. I sometimes have
to forget. That's fine. It kind of, you know, as far as these people being cruel, I mean, I hearken back to the presidential debate where they were talking about health care, and, you know, at the Republican debate, and people in the crowd said, let them die. And the candidates on the stage agreed with that sentiment. So I can't say I'm surprised.
Well, no, that was cranky old Ron Paul back in 2012, wasn't it? He said, what are we supposed to do? Just let them die in the hallways? And the Republicans cheered.
Yeah.
They wanted them dying in the hallways.
Yeah.
I think there's value, Rick, in keeping in perspective the fact that, as so often the case, I mean, Trump is the poster child, but there is a wider, broader, and deeper problem insofar as these are Republican policies. I just got a note from Michael in Madison saying, I always say whenever a libertarian gets something right, it's always for the wrong reason. Because it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if Trump and Pence disappeared tomorrow, you'd still have them look, he made a thing out of the national anthem. But Jesus Christ, I've been around too long. I remember Republicans wrapping themselves up in the flag and talking about wanting to have a constitutional amendment to ban the burning of the flag. And everybody and their goddamn cousin knows that that would be absolutely unconstitutional. But unconstitutional doesn't slow those bastards down. Look,
amend the Constitution.
I mean, let's take a minute here, okay, Billable Rick? I mean, bring your expertise to bear on this. We had lots of litigation over the Affordable Care Act, correct? I'm going to cross-examine you here.
Oh, a ton of it.
And wasn't at least one of those cases specifically in regard to the subsidies? Yes.
I think so, yes. Yeah,
because some ne'er-do-well hard case dead-ender from West Virginia was one of the named plaintiffs. The one of those right-wing think tanks scrounged him up and made him a plaintiff, and he said, it ain't fair for the government, federal government, to give subsidies to West Virginia because in West Virginia, blah, 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 blah. And the Supreme Court said, no, the subsidies are just fine. It's quite legal.
And so the difference, Bob, the subsidies that Trump has decided not to do it are the cost reduction subsidies that allow insurance companies to basically offer stuff that's affordable to lower income people.
The marketplace subsidies.
Right.
It subsidizes the ability of people to buy health insurance from the for-profit market.
Well, I think these payments that Trump is going against aren't the subsidies that individuals get through the tax code. It's the cost reduction subsidy payments that are paid to the insurance companies to enable them to stay in the market to offer policies that lower income folks can afford to pay for.
Right, but if one subsidy is legal, why isn't the other?
Well, because in the statute, Congress did not specifically authorize payments of the CSRs to the insurance companies. Norman Goldman had a real good segment on that today on his show. I caught the first part of that before this show started.
Well, I knew there were two different layers of subsidies.
Yeah.
But it seems to me like. It smells a little bit, at least, of res judicata, and they've litigated the living be Jesus out of this. Why didn't they litigate that?
Well, it's called death by a thousand cuts. Actually, this latest lawsuit to outlaw the cost, the CSR is the cost reduction, or the CRS is the cost reduction subsidies, was actually brought by constitutional scholar Jonathan Turley, a libertarian scholar out of Georgetown, I think, and he actually won the case at the district court level, and so the district court had, I guess, stayed the program or whatever, and the government apparently has decided to drop their appeal based on what Trump is going to do.
Right, because the statement that was released last night said that it was as a result of the opinion issued by the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
right. Not to appeal.
Well, no, specific. No, they were specific relative to the subsidies that they are unconstitutional and illegal.
Okay.
So, you know, that's what you get with change.
But that opinion, Bob, would have been written with respect to a court decision that was adverse to the government because they decide whether they're going to take the appeal up to the.
Yeah, what they're doing here is they're taking a page out of the Obama playbook, because remember when all the values voters got their maiden forms in a bunch because the Obama administration decided it would not defend,
DOMA.
DOMA, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah,
so,
I remember that.
Meanwhile, note coming in from James with lots of exclamation points, it's a tax cut. It can probably be understood that way, yes. And thanks going out to Essie. Thank you very kindly, Essie. So, and thank you very much to Darlene. I've got good news. We were down to 225 to go for fundraising. We are now down to 115 to go. Thank you to Darlene and thank you to Essie for making that happen. So, we've got 25 minutes to come up with $115 to finish the week even. So it would be really, really cool if that could happen, $115 to go.
Bob, can I jump in here?
Absolutely. Jump in, Charlie. You're a little over-modded, but go.
Oh, okay. I don't know. This must be my phone or something. on the Phil Valentine show that airs on WTN here in Nashville, he starts talking about the Constitution, and he wrote a book called The Conservative's Handbook. And basically, he wants to follow the Constitution until he decides that it's just common sense to not follow the Constitution. Do you follow what I mean?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
Well, like he said, well, the Constitution says that, but it's just common sense. We can't do this anymore in today's society. So we're not going to follow that part of the Constitution, but we'll follow the rest of it.
Okay, just
sounds
like
a cafeteria constitutionalist there, Charlie.
Well, exactly, and you know, sauce for the goose and all of that too, because we don't shoot at each other with muskets anymore, so we don't have to have the Second Amendment anymore. I mean, how would they like that one?
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, I keep writing him letters, and he tells me I'm dumb because of my liberal logic. And I just told him, I said, you want to obey the Constitution as long as you agree with it, but whenever you disagree with it, you start your common sense crap and say we don't have to obey this because it's just common sense. We can't do this anymore.
Well, you know, it's not unlike the, you know, Catholics who disagree with the church's teachings and decide they're going to use birth control, even though 90% of American Catholics do use birth control. I mean, if you're going to be technical, you know.
I'm not too sure. I guess the religion that I was raised in, as long as you don't the way they looked at it, as long as you don't never conceive a child, then birth control is okay.
Well, it's the old rhythm method, Charlie, natural stuff, which of course works really well, right?
Yeah, it's like that old line about what do they call women who count days? Mother.
There you go.
But it's just, I mean, I'm getting sick and tired of the people. I can't really, you know, and I wrote Phil Valentine, I guess it was day before yesterday, and I said, the people who call themselves conservatives want two things. They want a police state and they want a theocracy.
Can't forget the tax cut as well.
Right, I didn't throw that in.
and basically no government regulation.
And they want to fuck the poor, too. Let's just call it.
Yeah, well, by having a tax cut, they'll fuck the poor because there won't be enough funding to fund social programs for the general welfare of the people.
It's like
general welfare,
it's like that
of the
line
people.
From history of the world. What about the poor? It's supposed to be, Charlie.
To promote the general welfare?
Yeah, but see, if you ask Fat Dead Tony Scalia, he'd tell you that the entire preamble of the Constitution is just a flourish. It's meaningless. There's nothing there that has the force of law. It's only the stuff that begins with Article 1 and after. You can talk according to the, and it's weird because it's coming from people who call themselves constitutional originalists. In other words, only the original meanings of the words of the Constitution have any meaning at all, except the preamble, which has no meaning and could say, we, the people of the United States, in order to have pie for breakfast every morning. And it just doesn't have any meaning. And that's what the constitutional originalists say. So provide for the general welfare. Fuck that. The more perfect union. Screw that, too. Oh, wait a minute. Provide for the common defense. Oh, absolutely. We're all. Yep. We're all over that one. We got to have some common defense, dadgummit. And this is because they are, and this is a technical term, hypocrites.
Oh, yeah.
And all of their reasoning is ends-based.
Absolutely. Yeah, they start with a conclusion, then figure out how the hell do we get there.
They reverse engineer everything that they want.
Right. No doubt about it. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
And meanwhile, Laurel adds by way of comment, the final step in the establishment of fascism is the subversion of the rule of law. Constitution be damned.
Well,
Well, who was that, George Bush, that said the Constitution is just a damn piece of paper?
No, he said it's a goddamn piece of paper.
Well, yeah, okay. So he doesn't believe in the rule of law either, unless it satisfies him.
Well, there's a long history. There's a dynamic tension in the. In the history of the presidency, whether regardless of what party the president is, where the president is always trying to grab more power for the executive, and once upon a time, the Congress would push back and say, no, that's our power. Lincoln did it. Look, Jefferson did it. There's nothing in the Constitution that gave Thomas Jefferson the power to buy half a continent at 3 cents an acre. He just did it. Andrew Jackson was specifically told that his Indian Removal Act was unconstitutional. And he said, let the Supreme Court stop me. And the Congress wasn't going to stop him. The Congress passed the law at his request. Oh, and by the way, just so that we'll know, this is an aside, but just so that we'll know that this stuff really does echo down the decades and the centuries, there is an American history textbook out for impressionable little American schoolchildren now that describes the Indian removal from the southeastern United States by saying that the Indians decided to move somewhere else so there would be more room for white settlers. The Trail of Tears just flat got erased. I've seen that a couple of times in the last couple of days, and for some reason or another, I didn't screen cap it or whatever. But yeah, and so the you know, Lincoln did things that were arguably extra constitutional in order to preserve the Union. There's nothing in the Constitution that gives a president the right to raise his own private army, but he goddamn did. The Union army that opposed the Confederacy in the early days of the war was raised by presidential fiat. He didn't even have the money to pay for it with, but he did it anyway. So we should be careful about saying that only one side does it, okay? This really is a case where both sides did it. Because it's not about political parties, it's about political power. And it's about the dynamic political power tension that exists between the three constitutional branches of government. So, you know, hopefully that's a little bit of an answer to the question.
Bob, you were talking about the Indian Removal Act. I think what a lot of people don't understand, the eastern tribes in the United States, and more specifically the Cherokee, they didn't live in little tents that they packed around. I mean, they had log cabins and stuff like that.
No.
They lived in.
Yeah, whole cities, towns.
Yeah. And people don't understand that. They just didn't pack their little tent up and put it on their back and head to Oklahoma. No. The Cherokee were very civilized and very, they were very well organized and all.
Well, so were the Haudenosaunee. The guy that we know as Squanto, since we're coming up on Thanksgiving time, we can start talking about this stuff again. He actually had a real name in his real language. I can't remember what it was. But he had been around because he'd been kidnapped. And by the time he got back to his village in what I think was then it would become Massachusetts, he found that it was entirely deserted or near to it because the people had been depopulated by action of disease. And for me, like, you know, I had that little vacation. Oh, how we enjoyed it. Running around the southeastern, you know, mainly, you know, Alabama and Mississippi for a little bit. And, you know, that whole area was hyper-civilized, as the term goes. It was hyper-settled. Remember, you know, I was talking the other night about Columbus Day and everything. This continent and the one below us had more people on it than the other continents combined. That's how successful people were at living on these two continents. And so, you know, the myth was propagated over time that white folks just found this vast and empty continent with a few recalcitrant natives who had to be brought to heel. Nothing could have been further from the truth. There were towns, there were villages. The word Tennessee, I mean, you're from Tennessee, Charlie. The word Tennessee comes from the name of a Cherokee town that is, whose location is now underwater. And it was the capital of the Cherokee people who lived in that region. Tennessee, T-E-N-A-S-I, I think is one way I've seen it spelled.
Yep.
And John Sevier, the first governor of Tennessee, knew that area well.
And the one thing that was really, you know, puzzling to me is I was, whenever I was, the contract was coming to an end at Fort Knox, whenever I worked up there, I was moving back to Tennessee to rejoin the company that I'm with now. And I was in a laundromat, and I was talking to a guy that was Chiricahua. He was from Oklahoma. And he was talking about there were some white people that literally just beat one of his friends to death and left him for dead. And I looked at him, and I said, "You got to be kidding me." And he said, "No." I said, "Back where I come from, over in East Tennessee," I said, "it's common to see people of Anglo heritage and American Indians that are married, and they raise their families and everything else." I said, "That is weird." So evidently, the farther west you go, there is evidently a lot more prejudice against people of American Indian heritage.
Oh, that's the absolute truth. I mean, one of the things I learned in my brief sojourns in northern Wisconsin, there is a ton of anti-Native bias among white folks in Wisconsin. White, conservative, Republican people. Because they think, because among other things, the Ojibwe, Chippewa peoples have fought to preserve their treaty rights from 1848, I believe, their treaty rights with regard to the non-ceded territories. And they insist on their rights to hunt and fish and in fact, to protect it. And they do.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of hostility. And you're right. The hostility it gets worse the further west you go. But there's a big difference between the ways of life of the so-called Plains Indians and the ways of life of the southeastern and northeastern and Atlantic seaboard tribes. And that's not saying one was better than the other. They are merely what they are is responses to the land in which they lived. And you live differently depending on the nature of the land itself. But all told, across the entire continent, life before the white people was pretty good. Yeah, they made war on each other. That's something human beings do. Yeah, they moved back and forth across the continent. Migratory is in the essence of being hunter-gatherer. And some moved toward more sedentary lifestyles. And the so-called civilized tribes of the Southeast were among those, the Choctaw, the Chickasaw, the Cherokee, the Muscogee, the Natchez, and a couple other I can't remember right offhand. I mean, look, one of the biggest causes for there was terrible, terrible violence in the late 18th century in Appalachia, from where from East Tennessee, North Georgia, North Carolina, all the way and all the way up into Pennsylvania. Part of that was because two of the tribes had decided that they could bump off a troublemaking tribe, and that would make life that much easier. And I'm talking about the so-called Iroquois and the Cherokee. The Iroquois and the Cherokee came to an agreement with the crown and said, "Okay, yeah, you know what? We'll let you have and it's what became known as Kentucky and Tennessee, we'll let you have it. Sure. No problem. Well, here's the problem. That land was full of Shawnee. And the Shawnee were not in on the bargain. And the Shawnee did not take too kindly to the Iroquois and the Cherokee negotiating away the Shawnee's rights. There's a lot more complication and nuance to it than we know. One of the reasons that the tribe that let the English survive when they landed at Plymouth, it was because they wanted to use the English as a means of overcoming their enemies. So they said, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And then the next thing you know, the white folks had turned on them, and, well, that's why they don't much live in Massachusetts anymore. If any of that makes sense. I need to send out thanks to Sylvia. Thank you, Sylvia, for taking us down to $95 to go. Fundraising with 9 minutes to go in the program. Thank you, Sylvia. Thank you very, very much. Okay, I was just, Steve was telling me something about the right channel. I thought it was me, but no, it was the Garth Brooks concert in Atlanta last night. Whew, that was a close one. I worry about that kind of thing. Sylvia notes, I've donated $20 in honor of my birthday, October 10th. So happy birthday, Sylvia. Thank you very, very kindly. It is much appreciated. No worries, Steve. I just wanted to make sure. I get so many notes about so many technical issues. It's when I see one, my blood pressure immediately goes up and I, you know, spaz a little bit, but no worries. By the way, Charlie, I'm glad to see you in the room this evening. I know that you were having some health issues, and I'm glad you're spry and chipper enough to participate. You feeling better?
Well, yeah, I had a blood clot they found, and I just about had the circulation cut off in my left leg, and now the insurance company is saying that they're not responsible for paying my stay in the hospital.
And their reasoning for that is what?
Well, the first letter I got said that I did not have a blood clot or was not starting medication, and I actually had documentation that said that that was a bunch of hogwash. So the next thing they came up with is, well, we have an agreement with the hospital, and they've billed you for this, and we're not responsible for paying for it. So I don't know. I don't know if this going to wind up in litigation or what.
You might want to be talking to a lawyer before it does. Just saying.
Yeah.
But then again, you live in Tennessee, and I'm sure your rights are considerably foreclosed.
Yeah, it's probably, I looked at it, and it's probably going to be between, I don't know, about $4,000, somewhere between $4,000 and $7,000. Unless the hospital truly has an agreement with the insurance company where I won't have to pay that and they'll write it off. I don't know. But I don't think that's going to be the case.
never give up, never surrender. Well, like I said, I'm glad we got you. I'm glad you're back in the room. And are you feeling better? I mean, is the thing resolved?
Yeah, I've had quite a bit of a bad go of it since last April. I had a crushed vertebra and a disc out of place in my upper back, and they misdiagnosed me on that. So now they can't fix that because it's already started healing. And then I developed a blood clot whenever they say it's probably because I was riding an airliner back from Dallas, Texas, but I don't see how that could have anything to do with it.
Well, I mean, if you're at any risk of those things, you're supposed to wear like support hose and stuff. But I just got a note and Glenn just kicked in, by the way. So we're at $85 now. Thanks, Glenn. Glenn said, subject line, fuck insurance companies. I'm so sick and tired of hearing about the stories, and this isn't him being sick and tired of you, Charlie. I'm so sick and tired of hearing about the stories where insurance companies fuck you in the ass, take your money, and let you die. And you know why those stories exist? Because we have a legal system that lets them. And if you take the profit motive out of these miserable bastards and you go to a universal single-payer system, you know, like Medicare for All, that probably happens a lot less. Either you get the care or you don't get the care. And if any any single payer system that turns away somebody with a blood clot in their leg, no, I don't see that happening. But you've got
You know, we have this problem. It's not because we have a problem with problem.
But anyway, I understand what Glenn's saying, and maybe. You know, maybe if we actually got to universal single payer and Medicare for All, it would be a little, you know, because it's a pain in the ass to be sick and have financial worries. And you can certainly speak to that, Charlie.
Well, you know, Alan Grayson was right.
You mean?
Don't get sick. If you do get sick, die quickly.
Yep, he absolutely was. Well, we got to get out of here. Thank you, Charlie. Good to talk to you. You get the last word. Thanks to everybody for joining in and participating this evening. Thanks to all of you who participate however you do. Thank you for your emails, your tweets, your Facebook comments. Thanks for your participation in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Rick, a reminder, Oingo Boingo is okay, but you really can't go see Al Stewart, okay? I just want to be clear about that. Let's see then. So thanks to all of you who, all of you who keep all of this going, and all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this conversation. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room and over in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thank you to our midweek utility pinch hit chat room moderator and all-around great guy, even though he's been known to drink Budweiser, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. Remember, if you buy stuff from Amazon, enter the address as smile.amazon.com and nominate Coal River Mountain Watch to receive donations, and they will get an itsy-bitsy, teeny-tiny little fraction of your purchase price every time you use Amazon at smile.amazon.com. Okay? So that's helpful. Every little bit does help. And God Almighty, I'm halfway terrified to think what we'll be talking about by Moran Monday. So, you know, strap in. If you're so inclined, go and check out the Jason Isbell concert. That's what I'm going to be doing in the next couple of minutes. And like I said, hopefully the overnight crew, the subscribers, will knock out the rest of the $85 over the course of the evening. Note coming in from Glenn. Did they give any money back to Charlie for the misdiagnosis? I get money back if they fuck my car up at the dealer. Nah, it doesn't work that way, Glenn, but I suspect you know that. The insurance lobby has a powerful lobby. So powerful, in fact, that they can overcome the mickle powers of the lawyering lobby. How about that? All right, then. Thanks, everybody. We are out of here. Have a wonderful weekend. You know, maybe over the weekend I'll post a picture of my cheap and cheerful chili. It's not nearly as terrified. It looks, you'll see, it looks really, really tasty. And in the meantime, relax, try to relax, have some fun, divert yourself. Whatever you can do to keep the madness at bay, you know, do it. And then we'll get together and reconsider the madness come Monday. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.